multiple blasts hit the Afghan capital, Kabul, killing at least 8 people and injuring over 30 others. Daesh terrorists claim responsibility for the attack. Russia imposes reciprocal sanctions on 25 British officials after London targeted the same number of Russian officials over alleged human rights violations. And fresh two-week restrictions come into force across Iran as part of measures to stem the spread of the new coronavirus. Hello and welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Our first story takes us to Afghanistan this hour, where multiple blasts have hit the capital, Kabul, killing at least 8 people and injuring over 30 others. The Interior Ministry says at least 23 rockets hit several areas in the city's northern and central parts. The attacks targeted densely populated areas in the Afghan capital. The Daesh terror group has claimed responsibility. Now, the group says its rockets hit Kabul, heavily fortified green zone. The area houses government buildings and foreign embassies. The Iranian embassy said its main building had been hit by rocket fragments after one landed on its premises. No casualties have been reported there. Now turning to Yemen, where the health officials there say the number of cancer cases has been on the rise over the past years due to the use of banned weapons by the Saudi coalition in its war on the impoverished nation.
For the first time in Yemen, capital Sana'a hosted the first scientific conference on cancerous diseases with a focus on gynecological cancers, attended by a large number of specialized doctors and academics under the sponsorship of the Yemeni Health Ministry.
We thought about enhancing the role of person, individual roles, families, communities, to be sharing us our concern about their health by educating them, by raise awareness about the signs and symptoms of cancers.
Since 2015, the number of cancer cases in Yemen has increased rapidly. According to the Undersecretary of the Health Ministry, Ali Jahaf, he says this is due to the prohibited arms used by the U.S.-Saudi coalition over the past years.
That they have used forbidden armaments in bombing Yemen.
Yemeni army says it has discovered large quantities of U.S.-built munitions at the positions of Saudi mercenaries while conducting clean-up operations in the provinces of Marib and Al-Bayda. Saudi Arabia and a number of its regional allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015 in order to bring for Riyadh-friendly President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi back to power. Riyadh is the largest buyer of American-made weaponry. Trump signed an arms deal worth $110 billion with Saudi Arabia in May 2017. The Saudi military aggression against Yemen, coupled with a naval blockade, has killed hundreds of thousands of people and plunged Yemen into what UN says the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Russia has imposed sanctions on 25 UK officials in retaliation for British bans targeting the same number of Russians over alleged human rights violations. Moscow says that targeted British officials are denied entry into Russia. It urged London to refrain from unfounded confrontations. Moscow pledged a proportionate response to what it called unfriendly actions against it. London, back in July, imposed sanctions against 25 Russians, preventing them from traveling to the UK and freezing their assets there. London accused those Russians of being involved in the death of lawyer and auditor Sergei Magnitsky in prison in 2009. Moscow said he was in prison for fraud. Well, Japan sets a new record for its daily coronavirus infections with over 2,500 new cases. Saturday marked the third straight day that the country's daily cases topped 2,000. The bulk of the new cases were in the capital, Tokyo. Japan's hardest hit city by the pandemic reported a record high of 539 new infections on Saturday. Tokyo's total infections account for some 30% of the country's national tally, which now stands at over 120. 28,000. The government says it will suspend domestic travel subsidy program in regions that are witnessing a rise in infections to curb the surging virus. It has not confirmed the details of the partial suspension, but Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga said new reservations under the program would be suspended for those areas. Well, Iran has imposed fresh restrictions across the country to help stem the spread of the coronavirus. The new restrictions are imposed in the capital, Tehran, and in other cities and towns across the nation and will last for 2 weeks. During the partial lockdown, non-essential businesses and services will be shut down and cars will not be allowed to leave or enter those cities. Also, vehicles will not be allowed on the streets from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. Violators will receive hefty fines. Meanwhile, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani urged people to avoid family and social gatherings and observe health protocols and restrictions to help contain the disease. Nearly 49,000 people have died from COVID-19 virus in Iran. The total number of infections has passed 828,000. Now to France, where thousands of people have taken to the streets of the capital to protest a government bill to curb identification of police. Protesters said they don't want France to be a police state. Similar protests have taken place in other French cities also. The government has introduced a bill that would place limits on the filming of on-duty police officers. Those found guilty would be jailed for a year or receive hefty fines. Supporters say police officers and their families need protection from harassment. Opponents say the bill would infringe on journalists' freedom to report. The Saturday protest was called by different groups, including the Yellow Vest Movement. It organized anti-government protests nationwide in 2018. Meanwhile, campaigners warn of a new refugee crisis emerging as asylum seekers attempt to enter the European Union from West Africa via the Atlantic Ocean. Rights groups say the EU is causing many deaths by failing to create safe routes for refugees. Jerome Hughes brings us more from Brussels.
A high-level conference focusing on the EU's treatment of refugees has just concluded in the European Parliament, Brussels. During the event, the 27-nation bloc's migration and asylum policy was slated. It appears a new crisis is emerging at sea as desperate African refugees try to reach EU territory.
Look what is already happening in the Atlantic. Hundreds of people are trying to reach the Canary Islands through the Atlantic, one of the most perilous routes in the world. They are dying there.
The EU unveiled a new asylum policy in September, but critics say the focus is on closing the bloc's borders instead of respecting international law and upholding the EU's much trumpeted values.
Our staff has spoken out against policies which are directly responsible for this unimaginable human suffering. Time and again, European nations and institutions have failed to act on their duty.
Many organizations insist the EU should be viewing immigration as an opportunity rather than a threat.
Behind all those people, there are hidden skills. We need to identify those skills and to use those skills in our European labor market.
The EU is paying billions of euro to Turkey and several African nations to try and prevent refugees from traveling. During the Brussels event, Ankara was accused of using the refugee crisis to advance geopolitical goals.
It is wrong to endorse the popular view of Turkey as a victim of the war in Syria. Turkey is on war in Syria since its very last start.
However, Ankara is highly critical of the European Union over its handling of the problem. Refugees continue to die in the Mediterranean. Those who make it are held in very poor conditions on Greek islands and now Spanish islands too.
Perhaps the most compelling argument being made by rights groups for the EU to do more is because the West has fueled so much conflict in the Middle East and Africa, effectively playing a big role in helping to create the refugee crisis. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has urged talks with the European Union as tensions remain high over Ankara's gas exploration activities in the eastern Mediterranean. Erdogan also said Turkey expects the EU not to discriminate against it or become a tool to open enmities targeting his country. The two sides are at odds over Turkey's deployment of a vessel searching for gas and waters claimed by Greece. Earlier this month, the EU extended sanctions against Ankara for a year. The bloc will decide in December whether to impose further sanctions. On Saturday, Ankara extended its mission in the Eastern Mediterranean until November the 29th, despite protests from Athens. Turkey has rejected Greek claims that its activities violate Greece's territorial waters. And now, crossing over to the United States, where more Republicans are putting pressure on President Donald Trump to start the transition process to Joe Biden, the projected winner of the November 3rd presidential election. Several Republicans in Congress voiced doubts over Trump's claims of fraudulent voting. Michigan Representative Fred Upton said he had seen no evidence of voting irregularities that would change Biden's lead over Trump in that state. Utah Senator Mitt Romney wrote on Twitter that Trump had failed to make a plausible case of widespread election fraud. Senator Lamar Alexander said Biden has a very good chance of becoming the next president. Maine Senator Susan Collins noted that Biden should receive briefings, office space, and access to government resources he needs to be ready to govern on Inauguration Day. Meanwhile, different U.S. cities have faced unprecedented demand for food aid amid new coronavirus-related lockdowns. In the city of Chicago, thousands of families in low-income areas have now been turning to food handouts. Volunteers say they have provided food to a large number of people in neighborhoods hardest hit by COVID-19. Many of those areas have been laid off from work amid the pandemic. Officials in Los Angeles have also warned of a huge spike in food demand since the start of the pandemic.
Pre-pandemic, we measure things in pounds, and we were distributing about 1.5 million pounds every week in and out of our distribution centers. And now we're running at 4 million pounds a week coming in and out of our distribution centers here in South LA and Commerce. And that's 145% increase in volume.
Officials said the coronavirus outbreak has put a lot of pressure on food banks across the U.S., especially ahead of the winter holiday season. They refer to record low lockdown-related unemployment rates as the main reason behind the increasing need for food assistance. They also warned of continued high food demand during the next year due to economic impacts of the pandemic. Well, the recent missile test carried out by the U.S. military has drawn sharp criticism from Russia. Moscow says the test goes against previous agreements between the two countries. Moscow also says the test is a new confirmation of what it calls Washington's anti-Russian orientation.
Russia says the United States has deceived Moscow, and the international community after it conducted an advanced intercontinental missile interception test. Russia's foreign ministry says the exercise used technology that is part of the Aegis Ashore missile defense system, which the Pentagon had assured the Kremlin was not aimed at Russia's long-range capabilities. A Russian foreign ministry spokesperson has described the development as quote-unquote a new confirmation of the dangerous and destabilizing character of Washington's anti-ballistic missile strategy and quote obvious anti-Russian orientation. Maria Zakharova says the test proved the falsity of American statements, saying, quote, for many years, America assured us that the interception of Russian ICBMs by American standard systems, including this modification, is technically impossible. There are fears the test risks paving the way for Russia testing similar technologies against America's intercontinental ballistic missiles. Moscow has already stated that it reserves the right to take the necessary response measures.
The Russians have been pretty straightforward about what their weapons capabilities are and their doctrine for using them. Conversely, when the United States says that it's putting missile emplacements in Eastern Europe as a defense against Iranian missiles that don't exist to protect European countries that are not demanding to be protected, and they have to strong-arm countries in Europe to take these missiles because they will then be targets for Russian missiles, it should have been clear to everybody that they were not telling the truth, that these were deployed against Russia in the first place, before any other proof was available. It was clear from the stated nonsense coming from Washington what the purpose of these missiles are.
On Monday, the U.S. military used a new advanced technology to fire, for the first time, a missile from a warship which downed an ICBM. Previously, the U.S. had promoted the weapons system as being limited against short and intermediate-range missile threats. Russia says this is direct evidence and a concrete example of how Washington manipulated public opinion of its country, lied to its international partners, and justified its actions in the international arena with far-fetched pretexts.
The U.S. military test has proven that American forces can intercept intercontinental ballistic missiles from a warship at sea. The use of a warship to down an ICBM is itself a first for America. Washington says its warship had struck and destroyed a threat representing an ICBM. The test was conducted in the Pacific Ocean northeast of Hawaii earlier this week. Russia had long argued that such tests violate international accords, like the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, known as the INF. Moscow says the so-called defensive system can also be converted into offensive systems. To make matters worse, the U.S. withdrew from the INF treaty in August of last year.
Following the collapse of the INF and before the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, the only remaining U.S.-Russian nuclear arms control agreement, New START, is also, as things stand, set to expire early next year. Moscow says it hasn't closed the door on negotiations to extend the agreement, formerly known as the New Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. The projected U.S. presidential election winner, Joe Biden, has previously said he will explore the treaty's extension without conditions. However, bilateral relations between the two countries have always been on very shaky grounds. Analysts say the latest American missile test will only escalate military tensions. Amid Russia's worsening relations with NATO, it could not have come at a worse time. Questions have been raised as to whether the U.S. may use the system against Russian military interests. The weapon used to down the ICBM, the Standard Missile 3 or SM-3, is part of the Aegis Ballistic Missile Defense System. Moscow has long suspected the system to be a major pathway to a U.S. global missile shield to undermine Russia's military power. The SM-3 missiles have also been deployed close to Russian soil, in Poland and Romania. Moscow says it has repeatedly warned it would take similar measures to ensure national security and maintain a strategic stability. Essentially, that means more sophisticated weapon systems deployed by the adversaries, while suspicions between the U.S. on the one hand and Russia and China on the other spiral out of control.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The European Union is rushing through new legislation to get rid of end-to-end digital encryption. This would mean the end of privacy for users of popular messaging apps like WhatsApp and Signal. What you just heard were words selected from an article under the heading, In Blow to Online Privacy, EU Seizes on Vienna Attack to Enact Long-Desired Ban on Encryption. The piece has been written by Alan MacLeod, who is a staff writer for Mint Press News. Stay with us for more of Alan MacLeod's article. A European Council draft resolution on encryption, quietly published recently, lays out the European Union's position in detail. The European Union fully supports the development, implementation, and use of strong encryption, it states. Encryption is a necessary means of protecting fundamental rights and the digital security of governments, industry, and society. Yet, in the very next sentence, it insists that at the same time, the European Union needs to ensure the ability of competent authorities to exercise their lawful powers, both online and offline. These competent authorities, a phrase occurring throughout the document, refer to law enforcement agencies and judicial authorities. Protecting the privacy and security of communications through encryption and at the same time upholding the possibility for competent authorities in the area of security and criminal justice to lawfully access relevant data for legitimate, clearly defined purposes in fighting serious and/or organized crimes and terrorism, including in the digital world, are extremely important, it concludes. Thus, the European Union's position is that its citizens should be able to hide their data from criminals, but not from the governments or its various spying agencies. The official justification for these new laws, Austrian public service broadcaster Österreichischer Rundfunk reports, is the Vienna attack of November 2nd, which left 5 people dead and 23 people injured. However, it notes, the European Union has long dreamed of pushing through legislation which lets it survey its population. In June, for instance, the European Commissioner for Home Affairs, Ylva Johansson, gave a speech outlining what must be done to win the fight against child trafficking and abuse. We must also deal with encryption, military-grade encryption that's easy to use but impossible to break, makes pedophiles invisible and hides evidence of their crimes from police, she insisted. It's our obligation to protect children. We must do what is necessary, she added. Civil rights group, the Electronic Freedom Foundation, is not impressed by the various arguments put forward by the European Union in order to justify the end of end-to-end encryption, calling it a drastically invasive step. We are in the first stages of a long anti-encryption march by the upper echelons of the European Union, headed directly towards Europeans' digital front doors. It's the same direction as the United Kingdom, Australia, and the United States have been moving for some time. If Europe wants to keep its status as a jurisdiction that treasures privacy, it will need to fight for it, they wrote last month. WhatsApp, a subsidiary of Facebook, has over 2 billion users around the world and is particularly popular with Europeans. In terms of user penetration, the top 5 countries for WhatsApp are all in Europe, with over 85% of Dutch smartphone owners using the service. Commonly thought to be the most secure messaging app, Signal is also extremely popular. Whilst it does not reveal how many users it has, its app has been downloaded more than 10 million times by Android users alone. Launched in 2014, Signal is an open-source app, and whilst Facebook and WhatsApp have a history of cooperating with governments around the world, Signal has so far resisted attempts to co-opt or neutralize its software, notably rejecting the Australian government's demands to install a spying backdoor for it. Österreichischer Rundfunk alleges that the campaign against encryption is being led by France and French President Emmanuel Macron in particular. The ground for this has been prepared since 2015 in a whole series of campaigns, emanating from Paris, it writes. While the EU represents just 27 nations and around 450 million people, decisions the body makes can affect the rest of the world. Indeed, the recent European Council document makes this clear, claiming that the EU will leverage its tools and regulatory powers to help shape global rules and standards. Thus, the regulations enforced on technology companies will likely become the standard in many other parts of the world, if not globally. This is not the first time that certain attacks have been used to justify increasing surveillance laws. Just 6 weeks after the 9/11 terror attacks, the US government rushed through the Patriot Act, a piece of legislation that drastically increased the state's ability to spy on its own citizens, even allowing for indefinite detention of non-American citizens. This is not the first time that certain attacks have been used to justify increasing surveillance laws. Just 6 weeks after 9/11, the US government rushed through the Patriot Act, a piece of legislation that drastically increased the state's ability to spy on its own citizens, even allowing for indefinite detention of non-US citizens. The act has been continually condemned by human rights groups such as the ACLU and Amnesty International. It should be noted that the latest European laws would increase the level of government pressure on technology companies, and while it is likely impossible to ever end terrorism or child trafficking, it is certainly possible to end user privacy online. This latest law would likely do little of the former and a great deal of the latter.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, what can you do about complaining? Well, brothers and sisters, we know that there are three forms of voicing our dissatisfactions. One is complaining, the other is venting, and the third one is whining. Now, all three have slight and significant differences amongst themselves, which we talked about earlier. Today, we're going to discuss what can you do about complaining. Well, here's the deal. I'm going to try to provide you a framework and see if that helps you with the notion. Ask yourself these questions to stem the tide of complaint cascade. Number one, is my complaint specific and contained or general and vague? Vague, general complaints usually refer to problems that have no solution. For instance, the weather, right? Some people complain for weather, but there's nothing that can be done. Number two, are your complaints the same ones over and over? It might be that your complaints are a way of getting empathy or an indirect way of asking for help. And some people do get used to complaining because they think and they hope and they expect that if they complain, they are going to be helped by people around them. They're going to feel bad for them and, you know, just go out of the way to help them. Number three, are you afraid that if you don't focus on the negative in a situation, you will be unprepared for a major disappointment? This strategy prevents a person from fully experiencing the positive aspects a situation might offer. So see, if you stick to this three-point framework, you can easily see why you're complaining and whether you should continue to complain or not. Welcome back to your listeners. Before the break, we were talking about what can you do about complaining, because, you know, we're saying that we need to be pragmatic in a way that we should be able to deal with the challenges we face in our individual lives, in our family lives, in our social lives, in our relationships. But there are some people who complain, who vent, who whine. That's all they do, right? Now, we said that, you know, some of it may be good at some stage, but not always. We all complain at times. We know that. You know, none of us are free of complaining. However, if you feel you are complaining all the time, but getting nowhere, it might be time to talk to a therapist, because, you know, you're complaining just a little way too much and you're not getting anywhere with your complaining. Maybe there's a psychological issue at that point. Exploring your complaints can help uncover the underlying feelings that lead to this behavior and perhaps offer the possibility of increased satisfaction. As a matter of fact, many times in the society, we see that when people complain in front of someone, they vent in front of someone, they whine in front of someone, they get laughed at after they leave that scene, right? So especially for our youth out there, don't just, you know, show your weakness to others. Be confident, deal with the situation at hand, don't lose hope, pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, do tawassul. Right? Ask Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam for help and be that means through which you reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and He accepts your prayers. And, you know, be determined. Deal with these issues. Everybody goes through these issues. You're not the only one. So don't lose hope. Don't go in despair. Just be positive and try not to complain, is the message of the day. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
South Korea will introduce flying taxis to ease ground traffic congestion in 2025, but a regulatory jungle needs to be cleared before private flying cars and delivery drones are permitted to soar over high-rise cities. Even so, a wide range of applications are being trialed, and South Korea is well positioned to take a lead in drone adoption. We have prepared an article for you in this regard, written by Andrew Salmon Ryder. This article is published under the heading Air Taxis Set to Soar Over Seoul's Skies. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. South Korea will introduce flying taxis to ease ground traffic congestion in 2025, but a regulatory jungle needs to be cleared before private flying cars and delivery drones are permitted to soar over high-rise cities. Even so, a wide range of applications are being trialed, and South Korea is well-positioned to take a lead in drone adoption. For one thing, the country has implemented tremendously successful industrial policies, physical infrastructure and metal bashing firms in 1960s, mobile telecoms, broadband internet and tech firms in 1990s. For another, its citizens are enthusiastic adopters of new technologies. Last week was Drone Week as the Ministry of Land Infrastructure and Transportation, or MOLIT, promoted a range of programs to highlight the potential of airborne systems. Recently, six prototype flying taxis developed by Chinese company Yihang were demonstrated on and over Yuryeo, an island on Seoul's Han River. safety was paramount. Yurino is the site of the city's first airfield, boasts a huge park and plaza at its center, uncluttered by high-rises, and the vehicles did not accept fares. Instead, sacks of rice were used to simulate passengers. On Friday evening, November 13th, 315 drones drew images in the night sky over Seoul's Chamsil Olympic Park. The drone swarm was designed to showcase homegrown technologies. We will commercialize UAM, or Airborne Air Mobility, by 2025. Kim Sang-doo, Director of Aviation Policy at MOLIT, said on Friday, November 13th. The government, in partnership with the private sector, is building the infrastructure and an air traffic management system. A K-drone traffic management system is being developed with a state financing of 25 billion won, that is $22 million. The basis of airborne traffic management is a three-stage vertical zoning system, de-conflict aircraft, flying taxis and drones. From the skyline up to 150 meters will be the province of small drones, such as delivery and hobby UAVs or unmanned aerial vehicles. The airspace between 300 and 600 meters will be reserved for flying taxis. Above 600 meters will be exclusively for aircraft. The government's plan envisages a three-phase infrastructure build and rollout and is predicated on future technological advances. The first phase, set for 2025, would consist of an air taxi flight corridor beginning operations between Incheon International Airport to an as-yet-unspecified central Seoul location alongside the Han River, a distance of 48 kilometers. Dedicated vertiports will be built at both locations, providing landing pads at which passengers will get on and off. The vertiports will be like 2 to 3 story buildings with electric chargers on the top and stores, restaurants, and so on below, Kim said. The flying taxis will be electrically powered rather than fossil fueled. The second phase, anticipated in 2030, would be an increase in vertiports, probably to be added on and to and around existing ground transport hubs. The next step will be terminal to terminal, Kim said, for example, from a subway station to another subway station. The third phase, which Kim expects by 2035, would be a true taxi service. The final version is an on-demand hailing system, Kim said, possibly with helipads on high rises, taking the place of purpose-built vertiports. Helicopter taxis are banned in Seoul due to noise pollution, but that noise is obviated by drone technologies. However, multiple Seoul high-rises already boast helicopter landed pads, albeit for emergency, not commercial use. Deputy Director of MOLIT's Drone Transport Division, Jong Yong-ki, told Asia Times. According to Kim, the flying taxi project aims to cut road congestion in Seoul. The city has a dense population of 10 million, with 25 million in the extended conurbation, and suffers horrendous traffic jams. Seoul already boasts highly efficient mass transit systems, a widespread modern subway system, and a bus network that operates on dedicated lanes. Given this, it is not clear that the vehicles showcased recently will be able to meet that aim without massively scaling up. The flying taxis, as envisaged, offer only 2 or 5 seats. Moreover, the vehicles will not be true UAVs. One seat will be taken up by a pilot, adding to the cost. UAVs were originally pioneered by the military. Civilian flying vehicles use drone rather than helicopter or plane technologies. Far more stringent safety regulations are essential as they will carry passengers. Even so, once technologies are upgraded, safety protocols are tested and proven, and the public accepts the new paradigm. Zhang anticipates a 3-phase transformation of the vehicles. The first flying taxis will be piloted, the second phase will be piloted remotely, and the final phase will be fully autonomous. But as the aim is congestion reduction, current plans are only being designed for flying taxis, rather than privately owned flying cars, Zhang admitted. This factor, so affecting potential economies of a scale, may affect the commercial viability of production for manufacturers. True drones, that is UAVs, offer a broad range of applications, from delivery services to public safety to entertainment. Entertainment was the name of the game in Changshil on Friday, November 13th. In a 15-minute show, a 315-strong drone swarm performed a series of information aerial maneuvers that sketched out images in the sky, including a 1988 Olympic symbol, a 2002 World Cup symbol, and 22 COVID-19 virus on a map of the Korean Peninsula. The drones were owned and flown by specialist company UV-Fi, which was founded in 2014 and has annual revenues of around $2 million, CEO Hyun Lim told Asia Times. It not only operates the light shows, it manufactures and exports drones to 20 countries, Lim said. Locally, UV-Fi was a guinea pig in a government's regulatory sandbox for drones, so has earned experience not only in aerial ads, messages written in night skies, but also in gaining the necessary permits for its clients. Laws enabling aerial ads were passed in 2018, enabling a drone show over the Pyeongchang Winter Olympic Games that year. We deliver messages in the sky, and spectators really focus on it. They all photograph it and post on Instagram, Lim said. It's impactful, it's unique, and it attracts eyeballs. Drone shows have been used over government festivals, K-pop concerts, and even baseball matches. Like fireworks, it is most effective in evenings, Lim said. He expects his products to replace fireworks for many events, as fireworks are one-off and environmentally unfriendly. Night skies could feasibly become the next corporate billboard. Lim says he's planning a major show at year-end for a corporate client. Lim's MOLIT-sponsored show required special permissions. There are stringent restrictions on drone use in Seoul, not simply for the obvious risks of machines dropping out of the sky onto people or vehicles. The city lies just 50 kilometers south of North Korea. In Seoul, all drones are restricted for security reasons. Park Sang-joon, a researcher at the Korea Institute of Aviation Safety Technology, told Asia Times. The entire city lies in the Korean Air Defense Identification Zone. Airborne security is a real issue. In the countryside, drones are being used for a wide range of applications. These include public surveillance of dams, forest fires and wildlife, for example, and pesticide spraying. One of the most promising and widely awaited applications of civilian drones is aerial delivery, as pioneered by companies including Amazon, DHL, and Russian Postal Service. While much of South Korea's drone testing has been undertaken in rural areas, trials for delivery applications are underway in urban areas. In September, MOLIT tested an autonomous drone food delivery service in Sejong City, a purpose-built administrative hub of 130 kilometers southeast of Seoul. Five drones delivered products to recipients in high-rise buildings over a range of 2 to 3 kilometers. Next year, trials will be ramped up in urban environments. We can't call these demonstrations, but we are aiming at commercialization, Moon said. He anticipates drones being commercialized for logistics use in 2023.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on November 3, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference on the occasion of the birthday anniversaries of the Holy Prophet of Islam and Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq. Greetings be upon them. And which coincides this year with the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance and Unity Week. Arrogance utilizes science and technology to exercise its taghuti power.
Pharaoh used to say, "Does not the dominion of Egypt belong to me?" The Holy Quran, chapter 43, verse 51. Very well, he could do whatever he wished in the dominion of Egypt. However, today, the U.S., which is like Pharaoh in those days, not satisfied with the country of the United States. He does not say, "Does not the dominion of Egypt belong to me?" Rather, he embarks on transgressing against other countries. He wages wars, occupies countries, and sets up military bases there. Today, things are like this. What global taghuts do by utilizing human science and technology, resulting in discrimination, inequality, and warmongering, is more serious than ever. The Holy Prophet really grieves him that you should perish. The blessed soul of the Holy Prophet really suffers from humanity's pain in the present time. He is anxious for humanity to achieve bliss, and he wishes to guide humanity. Like a gentle father in the true sense of the word, he wants humanity to achieve bliss, to be directed to the straight path, and to achieve an end that will be good for it.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
There is a point in this holy ayah. It exists at the end of Suratul Bara'ah, a surah of war, of expressing one's hatred of the kuffar, and of commanding people to fight and the like. However, at the end of the surah, God says, "It grieves him that you should perish." As we said, this is addressed to the entire humanity. One can derive an important point from this ayah. The ayahs preceding this one do not address ignorant non-Muslims. Rather, they address the leaders of kuffar and the chiefs of arrogance. They address the apparatus of power that has dominated the fate of human societies.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.